Today, a week is a long time in these crazy markets. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. This last week could have been one that many investors will want to forget. Stocks, commodities, currencies, inflation, and the impact of the Omicron variant are all in play. And importantly, the yield curve is flattening, signalling an increased level of uncertainty. And as we will see, the future could be inflationary, deflationary, or just a continued muddle ahead. US stocks fell sharply after the November jobs report missed expectations and as more cases of Omicron were detected across the globe. The US economy added just 210,000 new jobs last month, well below economists' expectations for the 550,000. That was the smallest gain this year, though the unemployment rate fell by more than forecast to 4.2%. Even though payrolls growth slowed, the labour force participation rate, the number of Americans either employed or looking for work, edged higher. For women aged 35 to 54, the participation rate rose to a pandemic high. That could signal childcare issues are abating. Still, it remains 1.3 percentage points below the pre-COVID highs. It was a colossal miss, Darren Schringer, CEO of ASIC ETF, said. And when we look at these numbers now, it's concerning for me from an economic strength standpoint. Don't be fooled by the measly payroll jobs gain this month, because the economy's engines are actually in overdrive, as shown by the plunge in joblessness, said Crispa Rubke, chief economist at Ford Bonds in New York, for the other side of the argument. Still, a deeper dive into the monthly job report does show signs of strength in the labour market. The unemployment rate, 4.2%, as the labour force participation rate rose 0.2% to 61.8%. While the weakness in hiring could complicate the decision at the Federal Reserve, Fed officials seem to be leaning toward faster monetary policy normalisation in response to high inflation, one of the analysts wrote. This is a sign of slowing economic momentum, despite the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis President James Bullard saying the report overall was positive. The household survey was at 1.1 million. That suggests there are probably revisions coming to the non-farm payroll side. But that comment bolstered expectations among some investors that the Fed will accelerate its taper and puts the US central bank on a path to lifting interest rates perhaps earlier and at a faster pace. Powell has indicated inflation is a problem and their focus will be on taming this rather than on all-out jobs growth. The chairman of the Federal Reserve this week said that perhaps it was time to retire the term transitory when it came to inflation. Now, none of us ever admitted we're wrong, and this is perhaps the closest we're going to get from a central bank seriously underestimating the rising cost of living. The Fed laid out the case for faster asset tapering via officials, including Fed Governor Randall Quallis, Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic, and San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell holds a similar stance, with US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen saying she understands the reasoning behind the Fed's plans. But some investors remain cautious, even as some worries about Omicron have receded over hopes that current vaccines will remain effective or be adjusted. The environment in markets is changing, Citigroup Private Bank Chief Investment Strategist Stephen Whiting told Bloomberg. Separately, a measure of US services industry activity hit a record high in November. Both sets of data appear to influence investor expectations for the US Federal Reserve's next move towards tightening its policy. Fed Chair Jerome Powell said this week that the central bank will consider a faster wind down of its bond buying program, a move seen by some as opening the door to earlier interest rate hikes. And several analysts say the jobs report would necessarily be considered a game changer, with policymakers likely to follow through with a faster tapering of asset purchases as inflation proves more persistent than previously thought. Volatility across assets, though, remained elevated, reflecting the Fed's shift towards less generous monetary settings and uncertainty about how the Omicron coronavirus outbreak will affect the global reopening. Powell told lawmakers this week that officials should consider speeding up the reduction of bond buying at their December meeting. A faster taper was backed by several other officials this week. Today's non-farm payroll report looks messy to me. Best to wait for the revisions next month before sounding the stagflation alarm too loudly. And if you think this report will push back the accelerated taper mentioned by Federal Chair Jerome Powell this week, you would be mistaken, said Jamie Cox, managing partner for Harris Financial Group. Markets have a lot to digest as the economy is strong, but the labour market is reaching its full potential and inflationary forces are already elevated, which is why the Fed is feeling more urgency to complete their tapering early, said Chris Zaccarelli, Chief Investment Officer for Independent Advisor Alliance. This is a reminder of the uncertainty on the pace of the jobs recovery. It will give the Federal Reserve pause as it considers accelerating its monetary policy tightening at its December 14th, 15th meeting. A slower pace will be welcomed by markets, said Ben Lader, Chief Global Market Strategist at multi-asset investment platform eToro. Former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers said that Federal Chairman Jerome Powell ought to signal the possibility of raising interest rates four times next year in order to restore what he argues is the central bank's lost credibility on fighting inflation. I'd be signalling four rate increases next year with two-sided uncertainty depending on how the inflation figures work out, Summers said. That will be a jolt, but a jolt is what is required to restore credibility. In fact, last Friday saw the most significant one-day fall for the Dow Jones Index this year, perhaps exaggerated due to Thanksgiving half-day trading, of course, and Wednesday's close saw the broader S&P 500 Index at its lowest level since mid-October. Big deal, you may think, and it is right to maintain some perspective here. Stock markets giving up 6 weeks' worth of gains hardly merits a market crash, but it is the increased volatility that has fanned the flames of the nerves this week. Of course, it could all end up being an excellent buying opportunity still, with the end of the year approaching, is perhaps not too surprising that some investors at least are happy to sit on their hands here after what has been a solid performance for stocks in 2021. It wasn't just stocks that experienced some nervous trading. If you want to see the opinion of the short-term future of the economy, oil could be worth a look. And here there has been quite a turnaround from the seven-year highs back in October. Crude oil, WTI, traded up to almost $85 a barrel back then. This week, so far, it's gone below $65. That is a sizable decline by any measure. And once again, what we're seeing is uncertainty partly fueled by the new variant. After a year of steadily rising stocks and commodities, this volatility has come as a wake-up call never to take anything for granted in financial markets. Wall Street's major indices fell in choppy trading on Friday, with the Nasdaq falling more than 2%, as investors digested mixed economic data and grappled with uncertainty around the potential impact of the virus variant. However, while the technology index down 2.6% was leading losses among the S&P 500's 11 major sectors, the S&P 2 sole sector gainers were also defensive, with consumer staples at 1% and utilities up 0.6%. The economically sensitive Dow boasted the lowest percentage decline of Wall Street's three major averages on the day, and other cyclical sectors like industrials and materials also outperformed. But Wall Street's fear gauge, the market volatility index, hit a session high in afternoon trading. So the S&P 500 fell 1.5%, the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped 0.76%, and the Nasdaq fell 2.5%. Technology stocks were among the hardest hit, with Microsoft leading the sell-off in big tech. In fact, Microsoft fell nearly 3%, while Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google parent Alphabet were down 2%. Chip stocks also exacerbated the selling in the broader tech, as Nvidia slipped more than 5% after the Federal Trade Commission sued to block its proposed $40 billion takeover of chipmaker Arm Holdings, citing competition concerns. We see the FTC's decision to sue to block the deal as almost certainly ending the chances of any acquisition, Wedbush said in the note. DocuSign, meanwhile, plunged 40% after its softer fourth quarter guidance suggested the e-signature company is unlikely to sustain its pandemic-fueled growth. But financials, meanwhile, were pushed lower by a slump in banks as the Treasury yield fell sharply, with the 10-year yield falling below 1.4%. The slump in Treasury yields comes as investors flag concerns about the outlook for the economy as the Fed appears to be ready to step up monetary policy tightening at a time when the new Omicron variant could threaten growth. Yet, if the new variant turns out to be less impactful than feared and supply chain woes continue to ease, the broader market could resume its trend higher. Over in London, the FTSE eased early gains to end low on Friday as losses in miners eclipsed rises in energy stocks. After rising as much as 0.9%, the FTSE ended 0.1% lower as base metal miners declined, tracking weakness in copper prices. Limiting losses were oil majors BP and Royal Dutch Shell, up 1.3% and 0.8% respectively, as crude prices jumped after the producer group OPEC Plus said it would review its policy to hike output at short notice if oil demand collapsed. Insurer Prudential climbed 0.6% and Legal & General Group rose 0.6% after German peer Allianz raised its targets for shareholder returns for 2022-24. Miners slipped 2.6% but marked weekly gains of more than 1% as commodity prices bounced back from sharp losses seen last week after the new virus strain was detected. The worst-case outcome looks a long way from being priced in, and if the fears about the variant are realised, risky assets could still fall a lot further over the next few weeks, said Thomas Matthews, markets economist at Capital Economics. But if it proves to be benign, all the uncertainty over the past weeks will unwind very quickly and we'll be back to the Goldilocks environment of the preceding few weeks. The FTSE posted a 1% weekly gain, recovering some of last week's losses, aided by a 6% weekly jump in energy stocks. The domestically focused mid-cap index fell 0.3%, dragged down by weaknesses in communication services and healthcare stocks. And home improvement retailer Wickes Group jumped 10.7% after it raised full-year profit outlooks, saying it had continued to trade well in the fourth quarter so far. Over in Europe, the DAX slid 0.61% and other European markets went the same way. The European Union's public health agency said on Thursday that Omicron could account for more than half of all infections in Europe within months, while Germany, Europe's biggest economy, said it would only allow those with proof of vaccination or naturally acquired immunity into shops and restaurants. And it will also make vaccination mandatory for those in the healthcare system from March. There has been some good news also, as GlaxoSmithKline announced that analysis indicates this antibody-based therapeutic drug will be effective against Omicron, while Roche said it has developed new test kits to help researchers detect mutations in the new variant. French industrial production climbed 0.9% in the month of October, and that was an improvement from the 1.5% drop the previous month, while German and French services PMIs remained in expansion territory. And in corporate news, most of the news came from Asia after DD Global announced that it will delist from the New York Stock Exchange and pursue a listing in Hong Kong just a few months after its $4.4 billion US IPO, while Southeast Asia super app Grab fell 21% on its debut after merging with a special purpose acquisition company. OPEC and its allies, a group known as OPEC Plus, surprised the market by sticking with the plans to add 400,000 barrels per day of supply in January, but the top producers also said that they could meet again before their next scheduled meeting on January the 4th, if needed. So the WTI was at 66.27, down 0.35%. Oil markets first rallied despite OPEC Plus surprising the market, but OPEC Plus has left a huge poison pill in their statement, retaining the right to convene an immediate meeting and to change their mind if Omicron continued to send oil prices lower. That has made it dangerous to be short at these levels, and that effect was to lift prices higher after the market sold immediately on the headline before reading the small print. Additionally, gold futures rose 1.22% to 1,766, but still below that magic 1,800 level and showing little signs of being that safe haven expected by many. Gold is flirting with its last major support level of 1,770 an ounce, and failure set up a possibility of a wave of stop-loss selling. Gold's inability to rally with skyrocketing risk aversion, a weaker US dollar or weaker US yields remains deeply concerning. Reduced stimulus and interest rate increases typically raise the cost of holding non-interest-bearing gold. Asia-Pacific stocks were mixed on Friday, reacting to the Thursday US bounce. China's Shanghai Composite was up 0.94% to 3,607. And China's CAC in service PMI for November fell unexpectedly to 52.1 from 53.8 in October, raising fears that domestic consumption is fading on the mainland on rising labour and energy costs, as well as particular virus restrictions. The China Evergrande Group chairman has been summoned by the Zhengzhou government after the troubled property developer said it plans to work with creditors on a restructuring plan for its offshore debt. Provincial authorities will send a working group to urge the company to manage risks, as well as to strengthen internal controls and management and ensure normal operations, according to a statement on the government's website. The development late on Friday in Asia came after the developer said in a filing to the Hong Kong Stock Exchange that there are no guarantees that the group will have sufficient funds to continue to perform its financial obligations. Evergrande had received a demand to perform its obligations under a guarantee in the amount of approximately $260 million, it also said. Evergrande has so far managed to avert defaulting on any publicly traded dollar bonds, but its debt trades below 25 cents on the dollar, reflecting a high likelihood of eventual restructuring or missed payments. More broadly, China's struggling real estate firms had another miserable month in November as a slump in home sales deepened. The country's builders are facing $12 billion in trust payments coming due in December, posing a major challenge for an industry whose liquidity squeeze has spooked global markets. Private sector developers are selling the fewest bonds domestically in nearly 5 years, adding to the risk of additional defaults. China high-yield dollar bonds saw declines accelerate on Wednesday afternoon, falling by as much as 3 cents on the dollar, according to credit traders. A gauge of real estate stocks gained 0.1%, while China Evergrande Group declined 1.8%. And Hong Kong-listed developer Kaiser Group Holdings Limited also failed to win approval for its proposed debt swap. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was down just slightly, while the Japan Nikkei 225 was up 1% to 28.029. In Australia, the ASX 200 inched up 0.22% to 7,241. The Australian share market eked out a gain on Friday thanks to little hard news about Omicron, with investors waiting for an early read on the variant's virulence or vaccine resistance. Details will not be released for another couple of weeks or so. The S&P ASX 200 ended the week 0.5% lower in its fourth consecutive weekly loss. The index is still about 10% higher for the year, though. The week global lead and news of the arrival of Omicron in Australia pushed the Australian share market lower, led by sharp falls in health, IT, consumer staples and property stocks, said Shane Oliver, head of investment strategy and chief economist at AMP Capital. So far, the 5% or so pullback in share markets just looks like a normal correction after markets have become overbought again, he said, adding equity market seasonality typically turns more decisively positive in December, particularly so from the middle of the month. The energy sector was among the top performers. Oil Search advanced 2.6% to 394. Whitehaven Coal rose 2.95% to 244, while BlueScope Steel edged up 2.45% to 2047. Nickel Mines jumped 2.18% to $1.40. Mining giant BHP gained 1.3% to 40.23 after its board approved scrapping the dual-listed structure to create a single listed entity on the ASX next year, subject to a shareholder vote next month. Rio Tinto rose 1.4% to 95.52. The financial sector was on firm ground with all four major banks up between 0.7 and 1.3%, and healthcare company ProMedicus leapt 3.79% to 57.78. TPG Telecom, though, skidded 8.6% to 6.05 on reports that its founder, David Teo, was looking to sell a significant stake in a block trade arrangement by Macquarie's equity desk. And stocks in e-commerce retailer Kogan dropped 4.2% to 7.71. It plunged 20% in November. Part of the slump followed the AGM, in which Kogan faced a second strike on a remuneration vote, and it unveiled an ambitious 20% annual growth target over the next 5 years. Biotech giant CSL was also in the red after confirming it was in talks with an unidentified offshore party in a response to news reports that it had exclusive discussions with Swiss-based Vifor Pharma Group. CSL and Vifor have held on-off talks for at least the last 6 months. The Australian Financial Review Street Talk column reported that CSL was now in due diligence and described negotiations as advanced. CSL's stock eased 2.5% to 297.67. And shares in battery materials group Novavax plunged 32.4% to 8.21. The company responded to an ASX inquiry saying it was not aware of any new information that it could explain the share price move. Gold stocks came under pressure as expectations of earlier interest rate rises in the US weighed on the precious metal, putting it on track for another weekly drop. Spot gold rose 0.3% on Friday, but was set to end the week around 1% lower. That's the third week of losses. And shares in Northern Star Resources receded 2.65% to 8.81, while Newcrest drifted 1.04% lower to 22.77. And finally, to that yield curve, which is flattening. A flat yield curve signals uncertainty and tends to be a transitory state. It could develop one of at least three ways. If the current short-term flattening proves to be a shakeout, but within the ongoing inflationary regime, then the curve will steepen again and will eventually get bailed out. Lots of inflation-sensitive cyclical stuff can recover into the next phase. But it could also resolve into a new deflationary phase. Remember that the yield curve can steepen under inflationary or deflationary pressure, in which case short stocks now. I'm prepared to buy gold and gold stocks on the crash. And I still hold this view because I think QE is fundamentally deflationary and debt deleverage is likely ahead. Or it could be that we find the Goldilocks needle in the haystack and hang on, during which you could travel with stocks holding a bias towards technology and growth and away from cyclical and inflation-sensitive stocks. The point is this. There are three very different strategies, and they can't all be right. Now, Berkshire Hathaway Charlie Munger told a conference on Friday that markets are wildly overvalued in places and that the current environment is even crazier than the dot-com boom of the late 1990s that subsequently led to a bust. Munger also said that he'd wished cryptocurrencies didn't exist and praised China for taking action to ban their use. I wish they'd never been invented, he said. And again, I admire the Chinese. I think they made the correct decision, which was to simply ban them. In my country, English-speaking civilization has just made the wrong decision. I just can't stand participating in these insane booms one way or another. Now, here is the problem. We've all been generally taught to respect authority and those of more expert origins. Of course, they know what they're talking about. Now, out there, there are some tricksters and some well-meaning expert sources alike. There are inflationists, deflationists, gold bugs, commodity supercyclers, bulls, bears, and every other flavour of market opinion that you can think of. You probably follow some of them. But be cautious of the echo chamber of like minds if you do. Remember, the market is the market, and it's driven by a whole raft of forces and egos. you need to understand that we are in an era of overstimulation and overleverage by design. And the financial markets have proven often to be wrong with tragic consequences. Some win, of course, but many lose. And so with the future trajectory so unclear and the yield curve signals so mixed, at times like this, it may be best to be cautious. Try to think independently until the macro stuff sorts itself out. My point is we are in crazy times and nobody really knows what is going to happen next. So anybody who definitively claims to know, treat with caution. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching and I'll see you again next time.